Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
The most important thing about sales and marketing is be genuinely interested in their response. Don't just do this process and wait for you to have your opportunity to tell them all about you and what it is that you do. Actively listen to what they're saying. Understand how they're behaving. You know, is their behavior very emotionally driven? You know, do you need to adjust your approach in one way or another? Because I think empathy and compassion are two things that are missing in our marketing and our sales approaches at the moment. They would definitely go a long way.
Welcome back. I hope your week's been awesome so far. If you haven't yet listened to my recent episodes, my conversations with business and marketing strategist Mariana Norton, and with speaking and creativity coach Will Reed, then do go check them out after you've listened to today's conversation. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Charlie Wyman. Charlie started her career by studying engineering. However, after chasing her curiosity, she found herself drawn to marketing and business leadership. Charlie believes in three things when it comes to marketing: curiosity, connection, and commitment, and that there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach. Now, during her career working across multiple industries, she realized that too many people find marketing overwhelming, frustrating, and that it usually ends up at the bottom of the to-do pile or at the top of the I'm avoiding list. And I can relate to that. So many people cut marketing as the first thing in times of uncertainty like we are facing now. Charlie's on a mission to help as many business owners, founders, and one-person marketing teams as possible discover the simple and effective ways that she has to market their business that not only works for them, but that's also enjoyable. She believes that marketing needs to be authentic and ethical, and that you are best placed to drive your own marketing. She doesn't do marketing for people, but instead she shows them what to do, how to do it, and also offers a lot of support and guidance around how to get it done. She does this through training, through coaching, and via her virtual club, the Curious Marketing Club. Charlie's also host of the Curiosity Key podcast. In our discussion today, Charlie talked to me about using curiosity as a key marketing tool. We discussed why market behavior is an important thing to consider before you do any marketing, and why empathy and compassion are required now more than ever. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Charlie Wyman. Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, all the way from Nottingham in the UK, Charlie Wyman, who's a business development strategist, a marketing coach, and host of her own podcast called the Curiosity Key podcast. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Charlie. It's a great privilege to have you here as my guest.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Me too. I'm looking forward to geeking out about all things marketing, about podcasting maybe, and business growth, of course. But before we do that, I know you also focus on LinkedIn and connecting with clients on LinkedIn, so that might come up. Before we do that, can you give us a bit of a whistle-stop tour of how you got to where you are today and what were some of the key moments in that journey?
Crikey, whistle stop tour. So I started out not in marketing. I started my career studying engineering because I love technology. I love engineering, but I quickly realized that I was not cut out to become an engineer. I was way too fascinated with human behavior and psychology and things like that. So I one thing led to another, and I ended up in Sardinia making olive oil, which was where my first business was born. So that was a kind of key milestone, because if you can imagine electronics engineering students selling olive oil and Sardinian food on a market stall, trying to develop a brand and market a business with no real knowledge of marketing, it was an interesting journey. I then came back to the UK and got a job. So I worked in grants funding for public sector. So I worked in sports and then healthcare. And I think because of my approach to work, I just generally get stuck in. I ask a lot of questions. I love building relationships with people. One of my project managers when I worked at the NHS, her husband had an engineering company, and she invited me to go and speak to him about a job. Anyway, I ended up with that job, and I started work as the marketing assistant, or basically the only person doing any marketing within the company. I didn't know the sector. I didn't know really very much about marketing. I was definitely not process driven at all in that sense. And within two and a half years, I was promoted to the global head of sales and marketing because I was just able to learn on the job. And I think because I'm a very curious person, I just met so many people in the industry, and I just started listening to the questions that kept coming up over and over again, and listening to the language that was used and how people didn't like the way that they were constantly marketed to. So I think I was like the anti-marketing person in that industry or in that space, because I refused to conform to the way that people said that we should be doing things. So I was there for 6 years, and then I got a job as the head of marketing for a shipping company. They were a group of companies that served the global shipping industry. And I worked there for a year before then deciding, you know what, I really want to help more people be successful. I want to make some form of global impact. And I believe that business is the way to do that. And yeah, I quit one day. I just went into work and I said, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to set up my own business. I'm not quite sure what that looks like yet, but I need some headspace to do it. And that was nearly 3 years ago. So here I am today.
That's fascinating. Oh, it's interesting. I did sort of curious about how you got into olive oil, but we might skip over that one and go straight to the marketing part, because I think one of the things that is fascinating that you kind of dug into marketing but didn't really know what you were doing, but you're always fascinated with human behavior. So I suspect that with your curiosity and fascination with human behavior, that's what you focused on in what drives people, and what are they looking for, and how do they react to a message that I might put out there. And really, fundamentally, that's marketing. So you're probably not encumbered by the traditional kind of push marketing that people are getting into more and more now, particularly with automation.
Yeah, I think because I personally resist a lot of push marketing tactics and strategies, and I'm very alert to when people are trying to automate a process or speak to you like they're trying to personalize something that cannot be personalized. A lot of companies today seem to want to skip the relationship building process and go straight to the sale, which in a B2B environment and in a technical environment, it's just very, very difficult. Because if you're going to be a solutions provider, and if you want to do the best by your customers, you really need to understand where your customers are at, what are their needs, and how do they behave in trying to get what they need and what they want. And I think that the more you can understand that, the more effective your marketing will be.
Yeah, that's really important. I think that's a really important message. And I mean, I'm a tech enthusiast like you, and the more that we can automate and I guess free up our time to come back to those relationships and work on the relationships, the better for me. But I'm very cognizant of not abdicating relationship building stuff or, you know, any marketing that that needs to involve a human-to-human interaction, abdicating that to some technology process?
I think a lot of people misunderstand technology in marketing and get distracted by certain things. And I'm saying this from personal experience because I was the head of marketing for this global company, and I had three positions in my team to fill. So we were very understaffed, we were very overstretched, and we had to do lots and lots of different things. So we were probably busy fools more than anything else, because we didn't really know how to manage this huge workload with what we were doing. And it was my boss at the time that introduced me to a growth hacker that came with all these bold promises that they can use automation to start that relationship building process. It's all very natural, uses AI, all of these buzzwords that you think, you know what, I'm so busy, I'll give it a try and see what happens. And you know what, the thing is, it does work. However, what you don't consider, if you just look at the results on the front, on the face value, you don't consider the damaging effects of running automation in that sense. And in this case, this was using automation on LinkedIn. And the first thing is that it is against LinkedIn's terms and conditions.
Yeah.
And also, you're playing a numbers game. So for every 100 people you connect with, you'll get a percentage of those people that accept your connection request. And then the idea is that you fire them a sort of direct sales pitch or an invitation to have a chat, you know, and you try to make it as conversational as possible so they don't think that you're using automation. But it is so obvious. I mean, I was actually very good at those messages. I was a bit quirky and I was able to play around with those. But you do end up with a lot of people that you connect with that never speak to you. So you're collecting connections, but not actually doing anything with them. So from a data management point of view, when you're having a look at the statistics, it looks fantastic. You know, I've grown my LinkedIn network by 1,000 connections this month. Look at me, aren't I wonderful? But the actual end result of those connections is that you're creating a lot of work for yourself in the future. Whereas there is a different way of looking at this, and something that I work with a lot of clients on, which is, you know, what could you be automating that would then free up your time to start doing that relationship building process? Because there's a lot of automation that you can use, especially in marketing, that will save you a lot of time. That doesn't mean that you are compromising on that really important, you know, person-to-person, human-to-human interaction that is very much needed, especially in technology selling, especially when you're selling solutions. You need that interaction.
Yeah, no, that's really fantastic advice there, I think, for people to take on board the using the technology in ways to free up time by perhaps, you know, repetitive tasks that are purely transactional, putting those in technology and then using your time to build the relationships. And I think I get a lot of this on LinkedIn too, where people reach out to connect with me. And the first thing I have a rule, if people don't take the time to kind of tell me something about why I should connect with them, unless it's like somebody really famous that I would like to connect with and they've reached out to me, which doesn't happen that often. But if they don't take the time to say, you know, we checked out your profile, we see you're interested in X and I'm also interested in X and let's have a conversation. Unless they take the time to make some sort of personal approach to me, I generally ignore them. And and then, you know, occasionally, even when that happens, the next response once I accept the connection is, oh, wonderful, you connected. Check out my product here. You can get it for a special price right now or something like that. And it's always, that always cracks me up because I think, well, how do you know I'm interested?
And I think that is the real key point. And especially, you know, we're recording this at a very unusual time in history. You know, we're all going through very different, we're all having very different experiences with our business. Some businesses are very, very busy. Some businesses are really struggling, just trying to make ends meet and doing things. And there's a lot of people going to a direct sales approach or using LinkedIn as a tool to connect with people and try and push a product down them or get them on the phone to talk about how they can help you. And really missing a huge opportunity to just ask a simple question, you know, how are you? You know, I don't care what industry you're in, that there is no harm in asking that simple question, because unless you know how somebody is or what's going on in their world, you can't sell effectively to them, and you shouldn't do either. Because, you know, if you go, if you approach that in the wrong way, especially at the moment when people are very emotional, then you run the risk of being completely ignored. Whereas if you approach it in a very friendly, supportive and compassionate way, you could make that connection, make a good impact, and then you can follow that up when, you know, times do pick up, when that person is in a better place, when that person has more time. Because I think everybody seems to think that just because you have a solution to somebody's problems, that end customer wants that solution there and then, which isn't always the case.
That's right. Well, you mentioned earlier about meeting people where they are in their journey effectively. So, you know, the customer, I like to think of a customer journey as, you know, it starts from when you first have a conversation with somebody right through to when you've delivered a product or service to that person and beyond that, because it's about getting feedback as to how that product or service has been received, getting feedback or actually holding them to account. Have you actually implemented the actions that we agreed? And then the next step, even beyond that, then understanding, well, where else are there gaps? Do you have other gaps? You know, is there something else I can help with? So I think that's really important. So I like what you've outlined there in terms of starting that conversation with a how are you, and really just listening to the response.
Yeah, listening is probably one of the most key skills that any person in business needs, whether you're in sales, marketing, or what have you. And I think marketing is seen as a standalone department, if you like, but marketing really does run through the entire business. And especially in, you know, sort of marketing, sales and customer service, because the process doesn't just end when you get that sale for exactly the reasons that you just mentioned. So if marketing has an influence in the sales process, has an influence in the customer service process, you're able to sell more to your existing clients and make their experience better, therefore creating an army of fans who will then act as advocates and referral partners for you. So, you know, you're increasing the lifetime value of your customer base just by doing the right thing by your customers.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And I like to emphasize that all the time, that and some people who maybe in your sphere, in your community, but don't become customers, can still become advocates of your business.
100%, yeah.
If you treat them right. So it's kind of like, you know, they're part of the journey as well, even though they may not be clients right at this time because it's not the right time or whatever the reason.
Exactly. I mean, I used to run a networking event in Nottingham, and it was a monthly networking event. It was part of the LinkedIn local movement. So it was all not for profit. We raised lots of money for charity. We got a lot of people together. And a lot of the people that I met, you know, whilst networking were never clients of mine and aren't clients of mine today, but they refer people to me because they've seen me, they know me, they trust me. They know that I, you know, I'm good at what I do because I demonstrate that all the time. And, you know, it's you create an army of advocates that aren't always customers. And I think a lot of people misunderstand that. They just think, all right, it's only our customers that can be our referral partners, which is not always the case.
So how do you start a conversation on LinkedIn? Because I know it's your preferred platform for business development, right?
Yeah, I like LinkedIn. I think for the simple reason is that, first of all, it's free. And the second of all is that essentially you have a database of your entire market at your fingertips. You know, it's a no-brainer for business, really. It still confuses me why so many people don't use it. But in terms of starting conversations with people, there are two approaches. The first approach is if you're wanting to start a conversation with somebody that is an active user of LinkedIn. And by that, I mean that they are posting their own content or they are engaging with other people's content. And if you want to speak to that person, the most effective way of doing that is to engage publicly with their content first, or to then follow up with a message of acknowledgement around a piece of content or something that they've said on their profile. So, for example, I'm going to use an example of something somebody did to me, was that they went onto my profile and looked at my, I think it was courses that I'd taken or qualifications, and they'd noticed that I was a rowing coach.
Hmm.
And they sent me a message saying, oh, I've just noticed that you're a rowing coach. I used to row crew at university. Like, what kind of rowing do you do? So it was nothing to do with business, but it tapped onto something that I'm very interested in and something that I can talk a lot about. And they were interested in something that I was interested in. So I'm more likely then to have that conversation. And it's the same with other people. When I worked in the shipping industry, if I was going to an event and I'd never met somebody before, I'd have a look at who was following particular hashtags, or I'd have a look at who was engaging in posts about that particular event, and then send them a message to say, oh, I see that you're going to this event. Would you like to grab a coffee? Or, you know, what are you most looking forward to seeing at that event? And just start a conversation based on a mutual interest or a common theme.
Hmm. Yeah. The thing that strikes me, and it's funny that people forget this all the time, that's what you'd do if you met somebody in real life.
Oh, exactly.
You'd start a conversation with them, right? and people think that you have to be different online.
It's completely baffling, like, why people need to assume a different personality online, because it is the same. Or I think the best way that I describe it is that if you were at a networking meeting with your ideal client and you met them at the buffet table, you'd never spoken to them before, what would you do?
Hmm.
You wouldn't go straight in with a, these are the products that I offer, I help this market with this, blah, blah, blah. You wouldn't say that because they'd run for the hills. But, you know, you'd talk about something around a mutual interest. You know, if you're both picking up the salmon blini, then you talk about salmon blinis, you know, you would talk about the event, or you would talk about, you know, it's a British thing, talk about the weather, you know, but it's that first icebreaker question. And I think a lot of people just want to bypass that whole process, and they see LinkedIn as a way to bypass that process, which is a little bit short-sighted, I think. You know, you've got to take the time to chew the fat, so to speak.
Hmm, that's right. But LinkedIn or these online platforms, I mean, LinkedIn's really good in this sense, is you can have a look at a person's profile, what have they said about themselves, and you can tap into that common interest, so you don't have to imagine. So if you're standing at the buffet with somebody at a meeting, you don't know anything about them, I guess the first thing you probably do is say, I'm Jürgen, and what's your name? And then the next thing is, because they're reaching for a certain food, or because you're both at an event, so they're the commonalities you have, you'd sort of talk about that. Whereas on LinkedIn, you've got all this information about the person, so where they went to school, where they went to university, where they live, what jobs they've had, what interests they have, what they do now. So there's all this information, and so it's a wonderful tool in that sense. But the fundamentals are basically have that icebreaker conversation first.
I think as well, like, sometimes, you know, I speak to a lot of people that don't want to have those icebreaker conversations. You know, they don't want to talk about the weather, they don't want to talk about the food or what have you. However, what they can do is talk about something that's going on in the industry at the moment. So talk about a common foe. I mean, for example, you know, look at British manufacturing at the moment. As I'm in Britain, very aware of what's going on, there's a lot of smaller manufacturing companies that are struggling to get contracts because they're being given to much better known brands. And they're sort of competing against brands that wouldn't necessarily do what they do, but they have the ability to do it and the influence over the supply chain in order to get that contract. So it's a very emotional conversation, and it's something that a lot of people have an opinion on and have a voice on. So And it's an important thing. If we want to keep British manufacturing going, it's something that we do need to talk about, because we need to support our manufacturing companies. And this is not just in Britain. This is the same all around the world. So if I was approaching a British manufacturing company, you know, I don't know what they're going through at the moment. So talk about something that's relevant to them, something that's going on right now, something that they're likely to engage in a conversation with. And the most important thing about sales and marketing is be genuinely interested in their response. Don't just do this process and wait for you to have your opportunity to tell them all about you and what it is that you do. Actively listen to what they're saying. Understand how they're behaving. You know, is their behavior very emotionally driven? You know, do you need to adjust your approach in one way or another? Because I think empathy and compassion are two things that are missing in our marketing and our sales approaches at the moment. They would definitely go a long way.
I have to agree with that. And it's, it comes back to the whole concept of human behavior and how humans behave. And, you know, we've all got the same six core needs, according to Tony Robbins. And so addressing some of those are around listening to people and then reacting with empathy, like you say. So I love that. Now, one of the things you talk about using LinkedIn for is, you know, finding out who your ideal clients are and where they hang out. So how do you go about that on LinkedIn? What's your process?
So the first process I go through is to actually remove yourself from LinkedIn entirely and have a look at, right, who do you most want to have conversations with? So who do you want to have conversations with, and where do they hang out? And when they go to the place that they hang out, how do they behave when they're there? So in the case of LinkedIn, a lot of people hang out on LinkedIn, but not everybody hangs out in the same way. There are a huge amount of people that have an active account. They use LinkedIn, but to a normal person having a look at their profile, it would appear as if they don't use LinkedIn because they never like anything. They never comment. Their profile doesn't have that much information about them. But that doesn't mean that they're not there. It doesn't mean that they're not looking in groups. It doesn't mean that they're not having conversations in the private messaging space. And they may not be liking and commenting because that could be seen as a public endorsement. In a lot of technical industries and a lot of senior professionals, they're less likely to be publicly liking and commenting because it's seen to be a waste of time. And a lot of people misunderstand how to actually do that. But again, that doesn't mean that they're not present. So the more you can understand who you're targeting and how they behave when they're on LinkedIn, the better you can approach that. Because the other thing to bear in mind is, what type of content are they likely to consume when they're on there as well? Are they looking for long articles that are full of thought leadership? Are they looking for video? Are they looking for graphics and visuals? Are they looking for solutions to their problems? Are they aware that they have a problem in the first place? And I think this is a really key thing. You've got a lot of people that are trying to market solutions to industries and individuals that aren't even aware they have a problem yet. You know, and if they're not aware that they have a problem, you need to educate them that they have a problem. And then you need to educate them that it's important for them to spend money on fixing that problem and that you are the best person to do that. So that whole process takes time and a considered approach. It's not just as simple as saying, right, here, look, here's this widget or here's this solution that does this, this, and this, because they're just going to ignore you.
Yeah.
So it really is kind of taking it back and then just thinking, right, okay, who do I most want to be speaking to? How do they behave? What do they value? What do they like? And, you know, how are they going to respond to that?
Yeah, I love that you start with getting a really clear understanding of who the person is, and also looking at their values, their behaviors, and then taking that into the LinkedIn space. So I'm fascinated by the idea of, because I hadn't thought of this before, around some people on LinkedIn might be using it actively, but it's not, you don't see that because they're using it as kind of a private communication channel between their contacts and they may not be liking or commenting or posting articles.
And this is how I used to use LinkedIn, because, you know, I always describe it as an accidental personal brand that I ended up developing. So I've been using LinkedIn for many years just by doing something and hoping that I get the response that I want. But then if I don't, have a look about why I'm not getting that response, whilst also spending time looking at how other people are using it, what's working in spaces that I want to be playing in, or what's working for other people that may not be working for me. And what I do see is that if I post a lot of video content, or if I post a lot of text content, and then I go to an event, there was one event in London that I went to, and literally every person I spoke to told me that they'd seen my videos on LinkedIn and loved them. And not one person had ever liked and commented on any one of my videos, but they saw them all the time. So sometimes you don't actually know who's watching or reading your stuff until you actually have those face-to-face conversations with you. But the other thing as well is that a lot of inbound inquiries that you do get normally come from people that aren't actively engaging with your content. This has been the case in especially in regulated industries. If you're targeting senior professionals, if you're targeting people that are quite introverted, you know, those types of people generally aren't always ready to actively engage. But it doesn't mean that they're not watching you. It doesn't mean that they're not listening, and it doesn't mean that they're not there. So.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. And I guess one of the questions that raises for me, though, and it's particularly important right now, we're in the middle of this pandemic and we're all still in lockdown. Maybe by the time this airs, we might have come out of it, although I suspect that won't be the case for a little while. But what I'm curious about is, how do you get that feedback that you've gotten out of that event where people have said, oh, I saw your video and I really liked what you're doing, from when you're not having that, well, when you're not getting in front of that audience, because they're behind the screen there in LinkedIn?
It is really, really difficult. And a lot of people get hung up on metrics and KPIs with LinkedIn. And in the B2B space, it is very, very difficult to measure the effectiveness of an isolated campaign. And when I talk to people, I say that you need an integrated marketing approach, because the majority of your clients will have done their research before they give you that lead or inquiry, or before they pick up the phone to speak to you. So you need to be consistent, you need to be seen, and you need to be kind of coming across as authentic, whilst also marketing the things that your audience really care about and want to consume. So it is really difficult to understand, especially on LinkedIn, if you're getting a result from what it is that you're doing. And again, I think that you have to look back, what is your average sales cycle? So if you're marketing to people that are unaware that they've got a problem in the first place, that sales cycle is going to be a long one. It's going to take a fair bit of time. Whereas if you're marketing to people that understand they have a problem, they know that there's a solution out there, but they're just not sure which solution to go for, or they're waiting for the right time, that process is a lot quicker. So again, it does go back to understanding who you're targeting and where they're at in that buying cycle. So, you know, I had one client, he works in an industry where it can take up to 6 years to get a sale. So he is a very, very patient man. And he doesn't use LinkedIn every day. The majority of his market are not active on LinkedIn. However, he got 12 sales calls from people that had a serious interest in what it is that he was doing off the back of one single post. That's 12 sales calls. And those are from people that were watching his stuff. And all it took was for him to say one thing that was very relevant to where they were right now, and that prompted them to say, right, okay, I need to talk to you about this.
Yeah.
So I think, again, it's just, you've got to listen to your market. You've got to watch, you've got to also actively have conversations with the people you're targeting. So even if you are on lockdown, pick up the phone, have Zoom chats with people. Don't be afraid to actually have those one-to-one conversations, because you don't need events to do that. You can do it digitally.
Yeah, that's right. I'm revamping some of our automated email marketing sequences, and I'm simplifying one or two of them right down to the point of, I noticed you've jumped into this free course we've got online. Did you find what you needed? And then the second one says, you know, tell me what you like the best, or tell me what else you need. And there's actually a link there to say, you know, book a time in for a 15-minute call. And the idea there is that it's to start that conversation in real, in proper, rather than having that, you know, delivery of a whole lot of information that is relevant. You know, if somebody's signed up for that particular training program, then each email actually talks about the next step of the training program. But I've kind of simplified it back. So that's an experiment I'm doing right now to see whether people will respond to that. And then also, if some people have responded, and when they do, that conversation can lead to a whole lot of valuable information and feedback.
I'm pretty sure that strategy will work very, very well for you. I know that my diary is really busy at the minute, because I always offer discovery calls. I'm always inviting people to book a call with me. Let's just get on the phone. Let's have a chat, speak about what's going on. And I think now, because people have more time, I mean, I don't have more time. I'm not sure about everybody else, but, you know, I think a lot of people do have more time, that they are using that time to book those discovery calls. They're using that time to have those conversations with people, because whether or not they're interested in taking you up on an offer right now, they may be in the future, but they're using their time right now to have those important conversations. But I'm a huge advocate for constantly going to your email list or to your social networks and asking them questions about, you know, what's the most important thing to them? What are they struggling with? What are their challenges? What don't they like? People are much more willing to tell you what they don't like than what they do like or what they do want. And that's actually a bit of a ninja sales tactic, is that if you're going into a sales negotiation meeting, a lot of people are like, right, okay, so what's important to you, in what order, you know, what do you value the most? Whereas if you sit in there and just sort of say, right, okay, well, what don't you want? What's not important to you? You can get a real good understanding of where they're at, and a very different perspective, which will then help you with your sale, help you with your proposals, and also help you with your marketing as well.
Fascinating. So a little ninja trick there for everyone. All right. I was going to move on to podcasting and talk a little bit about your podcast and why did you get into podcasting, and, you know, what's it about and who do you speak to?
Lots of questions there.
Actually, yeah. So, all right, let's start with, why did you go into podcast?
I went into podcasting because I'd set up a podcast for a client of mine a year before I started mine. And the client was very aware that it was something that I was interested in doing for myself. And the client was also very aware I'd never done it before, but they wanted to set it up, and they were happy for me to use them as an experiment. And it was an experiment that went very, very well. And I think I just kept putting it off and putting it off. And I had a conversation with a friend who wanted to write her book. She wanted to get her first draft of a book published. So we agreed that we would set something bad that would happen if we didn't meet our goals. So that my podcast would launch and her book draft would be finished. Because I think if you set yourself something bad that will happen, you're much more likely to get it done. So I was pregnant at the time. So I said that if my podcast wasn't launched by April the 1st last year, I would let my partner name our baby. And I knew that that was never going to happen. And then I think my friend had something just as bad. So my podcast launched before the 1st of April and her book draft was finished. So we got that done. But in terms of what I wanted to achieve with it is that I think over the course of my career, I've met so many interesting people that do so many different things, who are really passionate about what they do. They're really driven towards solving some quite challenging problems that are going on in the industry or in the world at the moment. I believe that we can use business as a force for good. So I was thinking, how can I have interesting conversations with people whilst demonstrating that you can use business as a force for good, and also helping these people bring more awareness to what it is that they're doing and the great work that they are doing? So I thought, okay, I could start a podcast and I could interview these people. So my podcast is aimed at technology leaders and change makers in the world that do want to make a difference. And what I do is I interview those people and ask them why they started their business, talk a little bit about their journey, what marketing tactics and things like that have worked for them. Because I do believe that there is no cookie cutter method to marketing. It's all dependent on who you are targeting and how you want to do business. There are so many, you know, sort of factors that you've got to consider that, and I think a lot of people that are telling you what you should be doing out there, that it does get quite frustrating. So I think learning through other people's stories, other people's lessons learned, and other people's experiences is a really effective way of learning and understanding what could work for you. So that's kind of what I want to achieve with my podcast.
Okay. Well, that's great. That's a little bit like mine, although you've articulated much better than I could. It's fascinating, isn't it? You get to talk to the people on your podcast, and I was looking at the list of people we've got booked now. We've got bookings out to August now, and wow. I was seeing some of the people come in that my podcast assistant's been booking for me, and I thought, oh, wow, how did she land that person? Yeah, there's sort of some quite influential people there, but also people that are less well-known doing some amazing things. So this afternoon I spoke with a chap who's he's an American who's lived in Japan for the last nearly 50 years, actually. And he's a professor at a university, an international university there, and he's teaching business people all kinds of things, lessons from Japanese culture, and it's quite fascinating. And yeah, that was just one example because it was the last interview I did. But there's so many interesting people out there that have a story to tell.
Oh, I know. And I love speaking to people. I love listening to other people's stories and finding out, like, you know, what were those key moments that happened to them that made them do what it is that they're doing now and made them care about the things that they care about now. And I think for me, purpose has to come before profit and above profit, and people have to come above everything else as well. And I think if you care about your purpose and you care about your people, profit will come, and it will come in abundance. And I think that a lot of really incredible companies that do put purpose and people ahead of everything else have great stories to tell and have a lot of value to add into the world, but they're just not necessarily very good at talking about what it is that they're doing or promoting what it is that they're doing. So I think if I can play a part in helping them spread their message or get in front of more people, then that gives me a lot of joy and a lot of satisfaction as well. So,
And the other thing for me on that is also for my audience to see, hey, this person could be a model that I could emulate because they're doing these wonderful things.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Emulate. I think I cannot advocate that strategy enough. You know, look at the people that you admire, look at how they're doing, look at what works for them, and ask yourself, what if I could do that in my business? How could it work for me? And ask yourself those kind of like really important open questions, because there is so much we can do and so much fun we can have that I think we just need to allow ourselves that breathing space and that time to ask those important questions, to be curious. Because I think, you know, a lot of people have spoken to me at the moment, having had the time to think about how excited they are about their business again, and about how they've had so many creative ideas about how they could market their business, how they could better serve their clients, how they could do different things, how they could innovate, how they could create new things. And I think, yeah, we vastly underestimate the power of having that time to think.
Mm. Yes, and that's one little benefit from this unfortunate situation that we find ourselves in, that many people have suddenly got more time to think and reflect and ask some questions like that.
And I think the one thing that I have noticed, again, it's just an observation, I'd be interested to see the reality of it, so the statistics, is that the people that I've spoken to and the business leaders who do put purpose and people ahead of profit are in a much more positive frame of mind than people who focus entirely on profit. Like, at the end of the day, we all know that we need profit in order to run a business. So we do need, profit does need to be very important, but yeah, we also do need to make sure that our people and our purpose come ahead of that. And I think that, you know, when that's the case, you come through it, you come through it together. You come through it with a much more positive frame of mind, and also positive thoughts breed positive actions and also open you out to new opportunities. So, you know, there are lots of ancillary benefits to doing that as well.
That's right. And you mentioned earlier about a long sales cycle in one example that you talked about. And I think it's really important to have that mindset of playing the long game rather than just a short game and kind of trying to protect profitability at all costs right now because of the situation that we're in, and forgetting to look after your own people, your staff, your team, and also customers, clients. And the overall purpose, staying focused on that purpose. I think the companies that are going to do those things are the ones that will come out stronger from this, because people will remember.
And people are watching very, very carefully to how businesses are behaving. And I think, you know, if you are a business leader, now is the time to come out and to talk about how you are leading through this situation, why your people are important to you, and where you see things going in the future. Because I think it's very traditionally and years ago that we were so used to doing business with faceless businesses. You know, we weren't necessarily bothered about who owned that business or who ran that business. Whereas now we're very invested in the individuals behind these businesses. We're very invested in the people that work for these businesses. So I think, you know, the power of a personal brand and the power of actually putting yourself out there and saying, look, this is what I stand for. This is what we're trying to achieve here. We're being very transparent about it. I mean, look at the leaders of Zoom. You know, they made loads of mistakes and that, you know, they went public and admitted to those mistakes, but they also told people where they were going and what they wanted to achieve. And, you know, the market rallied around them. It's a great example.
Yeah, it is a good example, yeah. And it's a contrast with some other companies, and we won't name them here, but, you know, that pretend that it was somebody else's fault. That's not really true, you know. Security problems? What security problems? Yeah.
Blame is something, without going too much on a tangent, blame is something I want to talk about a lot more, because I think if you can stop the blame culture, both from yourself and from other people, because I think everybody's always got somebody to blame for the bad things that are going to happen. And I think instead of saying, right, okay, I'm going to blame such and such a body for this happening, think, right, okay, this has happened. I can't do anything about it. How can I make the best out of this situation?
Mm. Yeah, people waste a lot of energy on blame. And as you say, you know, if you focus that energy on, okay, it's happened, now what do I do to make it better?
Exactly. I have an 8-month-old baby, and I've pretty much been working since he was born. And I had one person in my like new mum's groups that was complaining about not getting support from her employer for maternity leave, even though her baby is 8 months old. So she's had a lot of pay and a lot of benefits and things like that up until then. And I was just like, right, at the end, I've received nothing from the government to help me because I'm self-employed, I have my own business. So I've not received any maternity benefit or cover or anything like that. I'm not getting bailout from the government at the moment. But am I sitting here moaning about it? No, I'm thinking about the opportunities that I could leverage. I'm looking at what I could do, the interesting conversations I can have with people, being grateful for the fact that I have some savings to fall back on if things do carry on for a very long time. There's no point in blame. Nothing good comes out of blaming other people.
Hmm. Yes, take action, move forward. Don't worry about what you can't control, but take action on what you can control.
Exactly.
Great advice.
Exactly.
Mm. All right. I think that's a bit of a positive note. We could go on talking blame in particular a lot longer, but also marketing and podcasting. But I think it's a good point to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's designed to help our listener take away something from tips from your experience that will hopefully inspire them to go and do something awesome today as a result.
Love it.
Okay. So what do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Be curious.
Be curious. Yeah.
And allow yourself the time to be curious.
Hmm.
I think a lot of people are too busy being busy. So give yourself time, schedule it in your diary.
Hmm. So how do you do that? You schedule some time, but what do you do in that time then that's scheduled?
So just in the same way that I encourage you to be curious about your market and how they behave, look inward and ask yourself, how do you behave? Where do you get the best ideas? Where do you think most creatively? I mean, for me, I'm a big hiker. I go up into the mountains, I go up into the hills, I like to go out in nature, and I do my best thinking when I'm there. So I go for a walk. So I make sure that I've got lots of time in my diary to go walk, to unplug, to think, and to do that, because that's what works for me. You know, somebody else may get their best ideas in the shower. If they get their best ideas in the shower, have longer showers. You know, don't put yourself a time limit on having a shower. You've got to find the thing that works for you. It could be doing a sport. It could be spending more time watching your child play. I tell you what, actually, I mean, I'm only 8 months into being a parent, but watching my son learn and do things is absolutely fascinating and gives me loads of ideas about other things. And my partner is an engineer, and he's the same. He's come up with loads of crazy ideas and things like that for when he's older and things like that. So
yeah.
Something as simple as just watching your child play can really open up your mind.
That's right. Well, young children have an innate curiosity, don't they? And we kind of tend to get it all trained out of us at some point in our schooling, I think.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that, because I think my schooling experience, I was told not to ask questions and I was told to just sit there and listen. And I think I did that for a time and it ruined my love for learning. And it wasn't until I started the olive oil business that I started to regain that love for learning. So I know for my son, his curiosity will be promoted for sure.
yeah, great. All right, now what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
I really don't think there is any one thing in particular. I suppose if I was going to choose one thing, it would be to work across different industries and not stay stuck in one space. Because the power of diverse thinking and diverse perspective can really help you develop an idea further and progress it more as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good suggestion. I like that, because there's so many things that are just plain common sense in one industry that if you kind of took that concept and applied it to another industry, somebody would say, oh, that is brilliant. How did you come up with that?
Yeah, and I think even if you've been in one industry your entire life, just go out and find people in other industries to talk to, you know. Again, don't just go to them and start talking about yourself. Again, ask them about them, like start that relationship. But, you know, so many people out there have different ideas and different perspectives to give. So surround yourself with other innovative people that don't always work in your space.
Great. Okay. What's a resource that you use most often, favorite resource?
Favorite resource? Trello, I think is a big one. And I think it comes as no surprise that I have lots of ideas around things that I want to do. So I plan out my business and my marketing and everything is planned out in quarters. So I work around a sort of 12-week year basis. Mm. And I do that on Trello and I have what I call a parking lot. So every idea that I have, instead of trying to pursue that idea at that time, because that can get quite distracting, I will put that idea into a parking lot and then review that every 12 weeks to see whether or not I want to incorporate that in my next 12-week plan or my next quarter.
Hmm.
And Trello's, it's a free tool. It's really easy to use and it's a great way to kind of map things out and store ideas and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fascinating that you kind of park things for almost until the next quarter.
Yeah, I'd get nothing done. If I pursued every idea I have, I would get nothing done.
Yeah, I have a brain dump board. I use Notion, but it's, you know, the board I have is very similar to a Trello board and it's a brain dump. And so anything I think of that is an idea I put in there, but I take a look at that weekly and kind of filter things out. Maybe I should extend that time period.
It depends on you. It depends what works for you. Like I said, I have a lot of ideas, so I have to put them somewhere.
Yeah. All right. Now, what's the best way to keep a client on track?
Best way to keep a client on track? Accountability.
Hmm.
So I have just launched a virtual club and one thing that's really important for me to develop into that club is that accountability piece. It's entirely optional, but the simple process of setting your intentions out for the week on a Monday, having a check-in on a Wednesday, even if it's just the client sending you something or just acknowledging in a public space to say, right, okay, I'm on track or I'm stuck with something or I need help here or what have you. And then on Friday, celebrate the good things that have happened and have a look at those intentions that you set yourself at the beginning of the week. What have you achieved? What needs to be put back to next week? You know, ask yourself, have you taken on too much? Could you do that? Could you learn from that process and apply that to the following week? But yeah, the best thing to keep people on track is set your intentions for the week on a Monday, check in with yourself on a Wednesday, and then on the Friday, celebrate the good things that have happened. Rinse and repeat. And if you can do that in a public space so that other people can see what those intentions are, you are far more likely to achieve it.
Mm. Yes, the public accountability is a big one, isn't it? And I really like the celebration because I think a lot of people would run that process and look at the end of the week and say, well, I didn't get these five things done out of the 10 things that I had on my list. And so they beat themselves up for not having done five things rather than celebrate the five things that they did do, which might be actually the things that projected their business forward that week.
Yeah, I think the key learning on that one is that business is exciting, or at least it should be, because it certainly isn't easy. Like nobody starts a business to think, right, this is the easy route now. The easy route is to go and get a job and work for somebody else and get all of the benefits that come with working for somebody else's security and everything else. Whereas when you start a business, it's really exciting. You know, you've got a purpose behind it. You know why you want to do it. You know who you want to help. But, you know, no business is, it sort of tracks on a straight line. You've got ups, you have downs. It's all part of the process. But even if you get none of what you set out to do achieved by the end of the week, there will be something that you can find to be grateful for or to be happy about. And just that simple process of identifying what has happened that's great and celebrating that, it helps you end that week on a high and it helps keep that excitement alive for your business.
Hmm. Yeah.
Even if you're looking back and you're just saying, right, okay, for the last 3 weeks running, I've set myself three intentions for the week and I've achieved none of it. The good thing that could come out of that is you'd be like, right, okay, do I need to just set myself one intention for the week? Am I setting myself up to fail? You know, and just look at things with a slightly different lens, but look at things by trying to keep that excitement alive and staying positive. For me, is a really important thing.
Mm. Great. Okay, now what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Be themselves. Don't be dictated by what other people think you should be. You know, I got this job years ago and I was completely out of my depth. I didn't understand the industry. I didn't understand marketing. I didn't understand this. I think my whole career, because I've always worked in very male-dominated industries, I've kind of been told to step back and I've been told to keep quiet and I've been told to just sit and listen and be that kind of wallflower. And I refuse to identify with that because that's not me. You know, if I've got a question, if it's a stupid question, then you can tell me it's a stupid question, but I want the answer to it and I don't care how it makes me look. And you know what? I've actually built a really good career out of doing that and having that approach. So I think don't be afraid of who you are. Don't be afraid to be yourself. And just in that process of being yourself, you will stand out.
Mm, yeah, great advice. And I love the questioning and not caring how you look. I think, you know, for me, there isn't any such thing as a stupid question. I mean, there's unless it's an unasked question, that might be a stupid question. But I think it's really important to kind of build those conversations. And I had Alex Osterwalder, who's developed the business model canvas, you probably know of him, on the show a week or two ago. And one of the things he said was, don't fear humiliation. So that comes that advice too.
Yeah, I think some of the best learning will come from that. I believe that, I mean, there's loads of people that says, like, you know, the best things happen when you're outside of your comfort zone, or the magic happens when you're outside the comfort zone. And I think that is so true. But I think if you pretend that you're really good at something that you're not, people will know that. And you would look stupid. Whereas if you said, look, I'm not good at this, but I'm going to give it a go anyway, you'll get the support of the crowd, or you'll get the support of other people around you. And it's a really interesting one. I think a lot of people fear what other people think of them. And I know I spent many years thinking that. I went to a girls' school with very cruel girls, you know, and you're constantly worried about what people think of you, what people might think. And I think as soon as you can detach yourself from that and just do your own thing, you know, you can do anything. You can do whatever you want.
Hmm. Okay. Well, thanks, Charlie. This has been really wonderful. Now, where can people find out more about your business and what you do, and maybe even get in touch to say thank you for what you've shared today?
Ah, oh, brilliant. I would love to hear from people. The best way to contact me is on LinkedIn, really. If you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, please send me a personal note to say, you know, just say, I listened to this amazing podcast and I want to connect with you and let's have a conversation. It's just Charlie Wyman. So that's Charlie with an IE, Wyman, WHYMAN. My website is charliewyman.com and my podcast and everything about me is on there. The podcast, The Curiosity Key, is on YouTube. It's on all of the podcasting platforms that you can have a look at. I don't know. I seem to be all around the place at the moment. But the best way is LinkedIn or email or website. But I'm always happy to have conversations with people. So just reach out and say hi.
Great. And we'll post links to all of those on the show notes. And as Charlie said, if you reach out on LinkedIn, mention that you heard her on the Innova Buzz podcast. I think it's going to be episode 297. And invite her to a conversation. Don't try and sell her something.
No, don't try and sell me something. Because otherwise you will get deleted.
All right. Well, what parting advice would you like to leave our listeners today, Charlie?
So without sounding like a broken record, because it is a very, very important thing to do, is just to be more curious and allow yourself time to be curious about things that you're interested in. Don't be afraid to be curious about a particular thing either. So if you want to be curious about something that is way outside of your usual area of interests or expertise or job or whatever, follow that curiosity, because you never know where it will lead you.
And I'd add to that, if you see something that kind of perks your interest in some way, start asking a few questions around why is that the way it is and what's causing that and those kind of questions. Because once you start doing that and develop that as a little habit, all of a sudden you're starting to become more and more curious.
There's a great book, actually, if you want to read about asking questions, called A More Beautiful Question by a guy called Warren Berger. And it's a great book that addresses how to be more curious and how to ask better questions as well. Because I think if you don't get the answer that you're looking for, instead of think that that person or that thing is not going to give you the answer, have a think about, did you ask the right question? And that's a really good leadership tactic for anybody that's listening that's in a managerial position or a leadership position. Because I started out in my leadership career as a really bad manager. I was a terrible, terrible manager. And it was only because I did a coaching qualification that I realized that there was a better way. if you're not getting the response, the result, or what you want from something, have a look at, are you asking the right questions?
Yeah, that is such great advice. And again, comes back to what we were saying earlier. That's what you can control. You can't control the answer, but you can control the question.
Exactly.
All right. Finally, Charlie, who would you like me to chat with on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
Oh, you know what? I knew you were going to ask me that question. And to be perfectly honest with you, anybody I've interviewed on my podcast.
All right. Well, we'll have to go through that list then.
Because they're all innovators. They're all wonderful people. They're all very interesting people. And I think they could bring a lot to the podcast. And you ask such wonderful questions here that it would be very different and also very beneficial. So, anybody that's been interviewed on my podcast.
I can't remember. How many episodes have you done?
Not a huge amount. I think I'm on episode 24 at the moment. So,
okay. Well, that's still quite a few guests.
If you wanted to start somewhere, innovation, I tell you what, actually, there's one woman, a woman called Rebecca Godfrey. She's just submitted her book to the publishers. She's a leadership expert in the pharmaceutical space. And I met her, I saw her on LinkedIn post about Lego. And I invited her to come and deliver a workshop for my networking group, which was a Lego Serious Play workshop. And she's such a genuine person that's got a real love for life and a real willingness to help other people. She's just very interesting, got a great background and a great story to share. So, yeah.
All right. Well, we might start off with Rebecca and then we'll work our way through the list of your guests.
Yeah, it's hard to choose one because they've all got such wonderful skills and personalities. It really is difficult to choose one.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Charlie, for sharing your time and your insights and your thoughts with us so generously today. I've really enjoyed this. There's been so much gold in this episode and I hope that the listener gets a lot of value out of it too. I'm sure they will. I wish you all the best for the future and let's keep in touch.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Hope you enjoyed that insightful and engaging conversation with Charlie and took something away from her episode. I really like her congruent message all throughout the conversation about curiosity, all the way from the name of her podcast to it coming up repeatedly in our discussion today, and then as answers to several of the Buzz Round questions. Of course, her core message to keep the human in marketing and meet your customers where they are in their journey is very important too. I'd really love to know what you took away from Charlie's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, and you can find that at innovabiz.co/Charlie Wyman. That is CharlieWhyman. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Charlie Wyman. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Charlie there, as well as links to her website, her social media pages, to the Curiosity Key podcast, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Charlie suggested that we have a conversation with Rebecca Godfrey, author of The Leadership Vaccine and founder of Ethio, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So Rebecca, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Charlie Wyman. Charlie also suggested we invite her previous guests from the Curiosity Key podcast. So we'll have quite a list to follow up. Stay tuned. And tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got even more fantastic guests lined up, including copywriter Hayley Green and Sam Keck of Common Folk Coffee. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.